Blog Talk Radio.
Frank, you ready?
Yeah, run that back.
All right, here we go.
Get down.
Oh, no. It's been a while since I've been up in the booth. Feels good. Feels like 98.com. Fake Rob, delay up in NYC. I see you, dog. Plugs locked up. I got you, though. Free plugs. Had to do it to him. Swipe a boy, take notes. Class about to start. Finally, got on a track with Bobby. We chilling in the penthouse while the haters in the lobby. 22 and already on a website, supposed to dismaze, but it just don't feel right. Let's take a second, take some time to appreciate the boy that led Tennessee to that elite eight. But it's still sad to stop and think about, though. We'd have cut the Nets down if Austin made his free throw. But that was back then, yeah, it's in the past. Me and Maze up on this beat, taking names and kicking ass. We flying by you like a Tyler Bray pass. Balls finna be on top, you ain't even gotta ask. We scoring all day in that checkerboard grass. Make Alshon Jeffrey look like he pumping gas. DMV ham, man, not even somewhat. Your team look as ugly as Mush Champ's butt cut. Don't get me started on that loser Mark Rick yet. He looks just like Kellen Hunt in a headset. This has been a pleasure, yeah, man, it's been great. Shout out to B Maze and Feels Like 98. What? What?
Feels like 98. It's Tuesday evening, 9:32 on the dial. There's been some demand for a podcast. I kind of wanted to let it go. Just kind of sit back and get through it how we get through it. But people wanted to hear us talk, wanted to call in. If you haven't heard, the University of Tennessee lost a football fixture to the University of Florida this year. I believe that makes 11 in a row, Josh Dobbs in a row. Joined by Megawatt superstar, actually living it up in Hollywood this week, Trent Flubbs. Trent?
Oh, Jerry.
How's Hollywood, pal?
It's nice. Well, I can see why people would want to live out here. It's good to get away from old Rocky Top for a little while too.
Trent, I mean, I don't even know what we're supposed to do on this thing. We've definitely we've gone back and forth on Twitter. We've talked to our families. We've hugged our kids. We've clutched our pearls. We've done about everything we can. I think we've passed the 48-hour obligatory bitch. Period. But I think we're going to extend it a little bit for tonight because I'm prepared to call that the worst defeat that I've ever seen in my lifetime. I've gone through the inventory of brutal losses, and trust me, if you're a Tennessee, you obviously know there are more than a few. But this one definitely stands out to me. This is the worst loss I've ever seen as a Vol fan. It hurts the worst. I usually at this age, I'm able to get past the loss by Sunday afternoon. I can snap and clear. I don't live in Tennessee. I can kind of separate myself and move on. I still think about this one far too many times a day, actually an embarrassing amount of times. Where does this loss rank? You obviously are a touch older and a touch wiser. Where does this hit on your power rankings?
It's certainly one of the worst losses I've ever been a part of. I think it was 1990 or 92 Alabama game where it was 6-6 and the clock was like at 10 seconds left to go in the game, and we line up to kick a game-winning field goal. Well, Alabama blocks it. The ball rolls like 25 yards on the other side of the field. They get the ball. They kick the game-winning field goal. It's just like that. It's just so unbelievable. You couldn't believe it was happening. You know, when that guy rounded the corner and took it, you know, took it to the house for a touchdown. I mean, when we missed the field goal, I collapsed in the floor. I did, in front of my whole family. And you got to get your, you know, it's hard to keep your dignity when, you know, when you're so emotionally invested in that game. And the Oklahoma game, I don't even rate it in the top 10 of most disappointing losses, really.
No,
but that
no,
Florida
no.
game, that Florida game was definitely, it's top three, and it may be number one.
Yeah, I, you know, again, Feels Like 98 podcast. Tonight's brought to you by the food quiche. And as always, big Don Trump, let's make Tennessee great again, make America great again. Don Trump, president. If you want to call in, we're going to talk to this for a while, and we'll take calls as they come. 760-683-2659. Where do you even start when you break this game down? Let's go ahead and get to it. There were some just mind-numbing coaching decisions throughout this game. I think something that's not even really talked about are the timeouts that were called on fourth down. I believe two times they took their special teams off and converted. And one was for a field goal with a freshman kicker making his – I believe his name was Jorge. And he was making his first kick, probably his first Football de Americana kick of all time. And we call a timeout because we're just not sure. They bring back on their offense and shove it up our ass. That was bad. I want to make sure I check them all off before I turn it back over to you. We had, let's see, the 2-point conversion is the one that's going to be talked about for eternity. You're not guaranteed a win, obviously, even if you get it, but it's basic arithmetic. I have a 4-month-old daughter, and she wanted it. She was curious as to why Butch Jones didn't go for two there. Although I think we do have video evidence that he did have two fingers up. We're not sure if he was doing the hook 'em horns, telling them to go for two, or I believe somebody on Twitter said that is actually his signal for kick the extra point, which that quite naturally makes zero sense. I'm sure that's probably right. That was very bad. The 4th and 14, the 60-yard touchdown. If there's something that sums up Tennessee, Florida, if you could summarize Tennessee, Florida in one play, I feel like that's it. Third down before that, you bring four. I think it was either Barnett or Phillips off the end who got to Greer, and I almost thought his knee was down before he got the pass off, but in fact it was not. But you got great pressure on him. And then on fourth down, you decide to bring three, which you got absolutely zero pressure. He could have cooked quite a delicious steak with all the vegetables, all the fixings. He had plenty of time to do all of that in the pocket. And then we decided to spy the quarterback. But I don't believe he ran for anything more than like 6 yards on a snap. But we just wanted to make sure he did not get to 15 with his legs. And then further on that play, the receiver makes the grab. You've got him surrounded. You've got like four. It's like you should have queued up the circus music, because then he just like twirled around, ran in a little circle, and we were just following like lemmings. Like we were just following him, like waiting just following him to our death. Just the most unbelievable football. I don't even know why I'm doing this podcast. I don't even want to bring it back up. Floods, you talk for a while, dude. I'm tired of talking.
This podcast is like going over to your in-laws' house after you've had a big blow up with them to kind of, you know, get things right again. It's not fun. I don't want to be on here either. So it's like we have no choice but to somehow get back in the saddle. But I mean, the whole icing the kicker thing. I don't know if we were trying to ice Jorge or not. I can't remember the exact situation. But, yeah, the timeouts were odd because, frankly, I wanted them to kick then. I didn't want them to go for it. The declining of penalties is strange to me. It may have been appropriate in this game. I don't know. But, there's some bizarre things going on there. I don't and there's definitely some sort of, and I hate the phrase, but there is some sort of pucker factor in the fourth quarter when really we should be, I guess, letting it hang loose and going for the kill, but we don't. Things get really conservative. And I'm talking like a, you know, like a redneck fan now because this is how they talk. But I don't have anything. I mean, I have no other explanation for this stuff. I mean, how can you – you cannot lose that game. You can't lose that Oklahoma game, and you can't lose that Florida game. You cannot lose that game to Florida. And we did. And as of right now, Butch Jones cannot close out a win.
Yeah, and the troubling thing kind of going along with what you said is that I don't know that we've seen – and I don't know his Cincinnati tenure well enough to say this definitively, but I don't know that we've seen anything that really leads you to believe that this was kind of it's just been an odd season or it's an outlier and something we can just dismiss. I think this is actually more of a very disturbing trend that when we take a lead in the fourth quarter against a team with, you know, comparable talent, maybe even better talent. I'm talking Oklahoma when I say better. Comparable being Florida. I think we're 2 touchdowns, maybe 3 better than Florida. You factor in that it's on the road. Okay, you probably need to win that by 10 or 14. That Florida's not incredible. I mean, they're not very good.
No, they're not.
But you're starting to see a trend here. I did see something on Twitter. I think it was 8th Maxim. Forgive me if it wasn't. It was somebody. Tweeted a picture of the Tennessee-Cincinnati game when Butch Jones was the head coach at Cincy and got beat by Derek Dooley in embarrassing fashion. fourth and goal from the one, down, I think you were down 35-14, so down 3 scores, middle of the third quarter, and he opts to kick 3 there too. So I don't think this is a one-off or two-off scenario that you can just dismiss. I do think that maybe we went a little hard on Butch Jones the first 48 hours, but I definitely think that I think it's in everybody's mind. If it wasn't before, it most certainly is now. The rest of the season, I think, is going to tell a lot about what we do going forward with Butch Jones. And that's kind of what I want to focus the rest of the podcast on. Where do you stand with Butch Jones? And then we'll talk about going forward.
It seems like he has no – I mean, you correct me if I'm wrong on this, but it seems like he does not coach at all based on how the game's going. He's coaching by the book, and there's no actual real feel for what's happening in the game.
I think Clay Travis has really come out of his trolling shtick a little and has actually shown that he actually remains a Tennessee fan. Which is nice to see. I think he's an intelligent guy, witty guy. I think he's saying – he's kind of got the platform to say what we've all been wanting people to say, is that, you know, on that – the Jalen Hurd run to put us up 13, I don't think he was even remotely prepared for Jalen Hurd running that to the end zone. I think that was a simple handoff up the middle, wanted to put it – center field, kick 3, go from there. I don't think he even considered the fact that Jalen would just waltz into the end zone. And when that happened, he just wasn't prepared. I don't understand this chart crap. I don't know football very well. I can certainly tell you that I Googled like chart. I've not found one that says to kick the extra point there. So I think that was probably just completely fabricated or completely made up just to try to excuse himself from that decision, or whoever made the decision. Listen, now we don't know who it was. It was the board. It was Jones. It was my mother. It doesn't matter. If somebody made the decision, ultimately that falls on Butch Jones. But where do you stand with Butch? What must you see going forward? What are your biggest fears, et cetera, et cetera? Talk to me, Trent Flops, Hollywood Trent Flops.
I just if we win these next two games, I mean, I think that would be a great start towards healing this wound. I think we beat Arkansas probably, and then, you know, if we're probably going to get off to a lead against Georgia and blow that about midway through the fourth quarter. But he needs to show, you know, a little bit more animosity and violence towards the other team, if that makes any sense whatsoever. Yeah, you don't see a lot of, you know, when Spurrier was just their arch nemesis, you know, he was relentless. He had no mercy on us whatsoever. And it's almost like Butch has this, I don't know, this sense of sportsmanship or something that goes way too far. He doesn't want to beat the other team. I don't know. Sounds crazy.
I just don't think he knows how to win. And I think that trickles down from him to the players. I don't think our players know how to win a big game. And I think that's something that, in terms of football players, that's a learned trait. I don't know how that works with coaches. I don't think we've seen anything that leads me to believe that this is something that's going to get fixed. Before we get to the calls, I see we've got some on hold. I do want to say this. I've been trying my best for this podcast to take emotion out of the situation, try to pretend that I'm not a Tennessee fan and look at it kind of like a business, and I'm the main investor. To me, this season needs to go one of two ways, and this is going to sound incredibly redneck, and I really don't care, because at the end of the day, I probably am a redneck. It's fine. I'll wear it. But if I'm looking at this and trying to take all emotion out of it, you need to beat Arkansas, and you need to win at least 8 regular season games. That does not build back all the lost equity whatsoever. I mean, that does not excuse what's happened. That gets me to next year feeling okay, not great, not even really good, but just still kind of wait and see mode. In theory, we should be better. I mean, our young guys are a year older. Our depth is a lot better. You know, I think we're going to land a top 15, 20 class base just because of numbers. Just stay with me here. Or if we're going to lose to Arkansas, we need to win like 4 games this year. I my biggest fear is being in that 6-7 win zone where you know what you've got, and that's a coach who can, I mean, listen, he does percent of his job tremendously. It just so happens that other 10% is like incredibly important, right? But my biggest fear is being in that zone of knowing exactly what you have, and not having really you don't have enough to let him go and make a change while you still have really good recruits, a really good roster, and it's a really attractive job. You run the risk of stringing him along or stringing the staff along for 2 or 3 years, and then finally it peters out, and you know then you have enough to where you can say, okay, we're letting you go based on the last 3 years. But at that point, who knows where we are recruiting wise? We could be back with a terrible roster, and it's a complete rebuild again. So I either want it to be apparent that Butch is the guy that we need to stick with going forward, or he's absolutely not the guy. I just want that decision made this year. I don't know if that makes sense or not. That was a lot of talking. I'm really talking of the night just because it's a shocking outcome. I almost would have rather gone down there and lost by like 17. I just the manner at which it happened is what makes it absolutely inexcusable. Am I crazy for that stance in terms of either winning 8 or 9 or more, or absolutely just tanking and getting it over with?
No, I don't think so. You know, it's therapeutic to talk this out, by the way. You know, so
it is. It is. Yeah. And you know, the good news is listen, it college football is cyclical. We've just been at the bottom of this cycle for, I don't know, going on a decade now. But one of these days, it's going to get fixed. It may be on its way to getting fixed. I mean, we still have a lot of good players, and there's still a lot of season out there, a lot of big games that we can win. So that's about as positive of a spin as I can put on it right now. Let's hit some phone calls, because I'm pretty sure everybody's tired of me just yakking. 615-714. There's actually a couple. So the last word, it just starts with a 4. You're on the air. What's up?
Hey, yeah, guys. Hey, this is Keely77 on Twitter.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, hey, guys. Hey, I'm kind of like y'all, and I appreciate you talking it out. I agree with Trent. I think it is therapeutic. Let me Let me just put this in something that I understand and I can relate to, you know, as a golfer. You're not up 17-3 on Oklahoma and 13 points against Florida if you're not worthy of being in the game, right? I mean, you got the talent and you had to get there somehow. I honest to God think, Butch, and this is a stupid sports analogy, but it's the only thing I know how to equate it to, is he's Mickelson in golf in the late 90s and early 2000s until he won one. You know what I mean? I mean, he it's almost like I'm not sure that he thinks he's good enough to be where he is, right? He's got the talent. He's proven in the past that he can win, but the lights are a little bit brighter in the SEC than they were at Cincinnati and Central Michigan, obviously. And it's almost like he needs to win one of these big games against a team not named Kentucky, South Carolina, or Vanderbilt to then get over the hurdle, right, or over the hump. And then once he gets over it, it's almost like, let's see what he can do. I honest to God, think, like you just said, Phil, is he's great at 90% of the job, right? He's a good recruiter. He's a good administrator. He's a good salesman. He's good at bringing the fans together. The 10% that matters, though, is coaching. And when he got into a situation, like you said, I don't think he expected her to score. And when it happened real time, everything is still moving at a fast pace for Coach Jones. It was like he take a deep breath and have somebody in his ear and say, hey, take a deep breath, slow down. Think about it. Don't worry about the chart. And the other thing that just kind of just proves what I'm thinking is, guys, we had the ball with a minute 36, two timeouts. We got first downs, and we ran four plays.
Well,
how does that happen? How do you not have your team run a two-minute drill every week at practice? I mean, two first downs and two timeouts in a minute 36, and he ran four plays.
Yeah, and if you go back and look at it. No, I know. And if you go back and look at it and you look at the sideline is a circus during all of this. You have players coming in, coming out, like running into the stands. Like, it's a madhouse on our sidelines. And listen, I'm not pretending that it's an easy thing, but you're paid millions of dollars. You have to map out every single scenario in your head. To be quite honest, I think you need to go into the game with every scenario covered already. Now, I understand it's a bang bang thing. You score a touchdown, you only have a handful of seconds to make a decision, but that's something that you have to already consider before the ball is snapped. And listen, like I said, you're paid a lot of money to do this. And again, he's absolutely flipped this roster in 2 years, 2.5 years. See, I think Oklahoma is a damn good team. I think we beat them on the field. I think we look as good, if not better. I think we looked a lot. I think we actually looked a lot better than Florida. And the good news, if there is good news, it kind of goes back to your point. We have a chance to have another big signature win to potentially get that ball rolling in 2 weeks. But you have to take care of you got to take care of Saturday because listen, Arkansas's had some tough losses, but they were thought pretty highly of coming in the year. And they do some things well, and they're just as thirsty for a big win as we are. But you get past that one on Saturday, and you do have – I mean, like I said, you have another chance to get a big win. You basically have two more of those on the schedule, and you can't lose any of the ones in the interim. You've got Georgia, you got Alabama. The rest you probably are going to be favored, and quite frankly, you probably need to win. But it's kind of like you said, there's still plenty of time an opportunity this year to get the ball rolling and finish with a good season. Obviously, we're going to look back and say, you know, right now, the thing that kills me right now is we should be 4-0, ranked top 10, top 12, going into a game against Arkansas, wild atmosphere in Neyland Stadium, and then look ahead to Georgia, which would be game day would come. It would be the match of the week or the game of the week. And you've thrown that away, but it's easy for us. I mean, we can sit here and bitch about it, talk about it forever. For fans, we have. There's nothing for us to prepare for. And my fear is that
players are thinking that and not preparing for Arkansas. So we're going to see what kind of a job he can do to use his cliche, snap and clearing the entire team to get ready to play for Arkansas, because Arkansas, they're not a terrible football team. They can absolutely come in and beat us on Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, here's one thing, too, and I don't have the time nor the inclination to sit there and watch every single play, but so there, it's not a rumor. I mean, there was someone that talked to Thigpen on yesterday, Monday. And I mean, the quote from Coach Thigpen was, "The players acted like the game was over and they were not lined up correctly on that fourth down. And it was almost like they were celebrating before the game was over." If that's even remotely true, so Thigpen yesterday spoke to someone, you know, who said that 4th and 14, if you go back and look at the tape, the secondary was completely like not lined up where they needed to be lined up, did not look at the quarterback, were basically acting like the game was over. And then they got hit with this pass, three guys around them, and they weren't ready for it. They didn't think the guy was going to create it. I don't know if that's true or not, and I'm not here. The point is, if that's even remotely true, how do these coaches not have them ready for that moment? I mean, we're talking snap decisions. That's not a snap decision. That is, hey man, until a game isn't 60 minutes, you need to be prepared, and that's my job. I'm really starting to wonder, do we have the right coach? Not administrator, not recruiter, not all that other stuff, right? The 10%, do you have the right guy? Do you want it to blow up? I mean, I'm just saying, I'm asking, and it's rhetorical. It's almost like, do you want it to blow up and get this thing over with so you can move on and just make a change? Or –
you know, I want to win eight or more. I want to win three. I either want to win eight or more, preferably
right.
nine or more, or I want to win three. That sounds so. I mean, but it's true. I don't want to have a 6-win coach for a second year in a row, and recruiting starting to suffer. And in 2 years, when we realize we should have let him go at the end of this year, we're back to almost
right.
where we were with Derek Dooley. I mean, a few nice players, no depth, nobody talking about Tennessee. Everybody more than likely laughing at Tennessee. Using Bush Jones' cliches against him, because that's the risk you run when you have a coach who's very who's got his megaphone out. He's a big promoter. He uses these cliches and things like that. I mean, that's going to be a joke around the recruiting circles right now, unless the season shapes up. But then I appreciate your call. That's two straight good ones. I certainly appreciate you listening. We got a bunch of callers lined up, so let's chat again.
Go get them,
boys.
Thanks, guys.
Thursday night. All right, brother. I mean, the guy made some fantastic points. Trent Flubbs on Twitter right now. There are some people that are saying that they hope we tank. They prefer to tank rather than win. Clompton says the business analogy that I use is completely lost on you. Let's see, I'm pulling against Butch. I want a coach who will win a title, not one who can barely compete. Man, I'll tell you, we got a party in the fort. Former message board user back on Twitter. He's going in. I'll tell you, man, the fan base is in a bad spot right now. Big game on Saturday, but let's keep the calls going. Another 615-714 number here on the horn with Hollywood Flubs and Big Pear. What am I calling myself today? I'm just calling myself Fields. What's up?
Jerry, yeah.
Thanks. Yo.
You got me?
Yep.
Hey, what's up, man? It's Rubra.
Rubra, what's up?
Oh, not much, man. I wanted to just kind of clear my thoughts a little bit, because I'm still shaking a little bit too on this one. I think right now, you know, the part that is hard to see, because they're playing so hard, is that at some point our players are going to have to make a play too. You know, obviously there, you can question coaching several occasions on Saturday, but I mean, we can't complete a pass. We're running the Wildcat offense. Kamara and Juwan Jennings threw better balls than Dobbs threw all day. And, you know, we missed tackles left and right on the last two drives. So, you know, yes, the coaches have to do better, but I think it's fair also to say, you know, somebody's got to step up and make a play. And the last caller kind of alluded to it. somebody steps up and makes one play, you know, now you're talking about turning the corner. You win that game in the Swamp. Like you're talking about, we're coming into a big game at home, then Georgia, then Alabama, with honestly a chance to beat all three, I think.
I do. I agree, too. I don't think there's an automatic loss on our schedule still. I still don't think there is.
No, absolutely not. We're so much better than we have been the last 2 years. It's ridiculous. And I think that's part of the reason that everybody's so frustrated, myself included, is, you know, how are we this much better and we still can't win? And,
no,
and I think
it's
that's a very fair frustration.
You bring up a really good point. I think I said something similar, Oklahoma. You make a tackle here or there. You don't blow an assignment, and you, despite the coaching errors, you win the game. And so, players have to share that responsibility. And, I mean, you can go back and look at some players not making plays against Florida. It's not like they played a perfect game. I think they gave a tremendous effort, and, you know, especially guys like Jalen Hurd. But, you know, while I appreciate the trick plays and I love the imagination, it's somewhat embarrassing that we had to go to them twice to move the football. I think when you have, you know, 50, 55 stars, a collective stars worth of, like, recruiting talent at receiver, and you throw, like, 5 or 6 balls to them each game, you know, and you rotate them out every freaking snap, are you even really giving your team a chance to, like, show how good they actually are?
Oh, it's embarrassing. I mean, we have the best wide receivers in the league, probably. I don't know who would have better. Maybe Ole Miss. But
I mean, maybe.
I think they suck.
Right, maybe. But, I mean, how many times have you seen – this is a legitimate question. How many times in the last – okay, let's call it Oklahoma and Florida. How many times did our guys get hit in stride with the ball? I'm not knocking Josh Dobbs. Josh Dobbs is playing his ass off. He played a great game Saturday. We're not in the game at all without him.
That's fair.
I mean, he's making plays in our run game. Probably horrible if he's not in the game. But, I mean, even the ones that he does complete, we're still stopping, catching the ball at our knees, turning around and trying to start running again. And, you know, it's Ethan Wolf and Josh Smith doing that. So,
well, that's a fair
point.
Just
gotta clean
it up. And you've got guys like Malone and Preston, and you really don't throw the ball vertically to speak of. I mean, everything you do is dink and dunk. And, I mean, if that's what you have to do to win the game, that's fine.
You know, I think that's why the board was brought in, right? Is to implement more of the pro style vertical passing game. You know, that he's thrown it, that you saw in Michigan. You know, that he's
right.
been around
and
we recruited that type of player. And I don't pretend to know what we see and don't see in practice, but it's like, hell, just throw it up. At some point,
well, and we're
right?
four games in, and we don't have a receiver with 100 yards. Is that correct? Did I hear that right today? We're 4 games in, and we don't have a receiver with 100 yards. I think our leading receiver, like yards wise, is Preston, like 96 from one game against like us three, and then like
yeah,
eight
I think he and Malone have like 90, but neither one of them have a catch outside of like 2 games or something like that, right?
In my opinion, that's absolutely inexcusable. And Flubs, you said,
right.
You think the receivers suck. I can buy that. You know, one or two might be like busts that you just evaluated on. But when you have like 5 or 6 that had like, there were like 4 or 5-star guys that were like just incredibly touted coming out of high school. And you can actually even see that they like have size, speed, the measurables and everything. And they can't, I agree. But you also have to give them more chance.
Yeah.
I agree with Brubber on that. You got to give them shots.
Yeah, I don't think Marcus Morris is particularly great.
They may be talented, but they still suck. I mean, currently they suck. I don't know if it's the coach's fault or what, but they suck. They drop everything, and they apparently can't get open. I think they're terrible.
Well, I mean, we've seen Malone and Preston have some success this year. We've seen Pearson and Pig Howard, who, where the hell is he, you know, play very well last year. So they're capable. Now, you know, they have to be able to catch it first, I guess, which means we have to overthrow it to
them
first.
They're capable, but they're capable, but they don't get it done.
I want to ask one more question. What are your thoughts on DeBoer's game on Saturday? I thought he called a fantastic game.
Flubs.
I don't know.
Okay. I thought, you know, I said the podcast leading up to it.
For us to win the game, Dobbs was going to have to pull the ball from Hurd and actually use his legs more. And I think he, up until this game, he's been a little timid, or maybe I don't know if the call was always to give it to him or he just didn't want it. But I thought he's always had some opportunities to tuck it and make some big plays. And obviously, I mean, like you said, without Josh Dobbs, we're probably not even in that football game. He made all the difference in the world. I thought it was good. Like I said, I'd love to see. I think Preston Williams is your big deep threat. I would have loved to have seen the ball tossed his way a few times, especially when you had Hargreaves out there checking north, who, like you alluded to, has done just next to nothing basically since his freshman year. And I think he can. I don't know what the problem is there. I definitely would have liked to have seen the field stretched a little more. But outside of that, I mean, we scored plenty of points. I mean, we scored enough points to win, and that's all you can really – all I really demand out of my offensive coordinator.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm gonna get off, but hang in there. You know, we beat Oklahoma's ass for 50 out of 60 minutes, and same for Florida. I mean, we booked them for more than three quarters of the game, so we're close.
I think if we win Saturday, I think we're gonna beat Georgia. So hopefully, we're having a celebratory podcast here pretty soon. Appreciate the call, dude.
All right, man.
Later.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Fluffs.
No, I was just saying bye to your caller there.
That was very nice of you. Trent, you did this. It sounds like this one just hit you extremely hard. I mean, and me too, but usually you can fake it. You're not faking it. You're mad. You're not happy.
No. I mean, there are a number of things. You know, there's some positives. If we want to be positive, I thought Dobbs played a very courageous game. May not have been technically perfect, but it was very courageous. I think Jalen Hurd's awesome. Man, Aaron Smith really kicked the hell out of that final field goal. Almost would like to have seen it blocked just so I didn't have that, you know, moment where it was going through the goalpost only to see it, you know, stay wide right. That's just a, you know, our punter is very good. You know, props to whoever that guy is. Man, he's good.
All right, it's time to go to a new call. When we're talking punters, time to move on. 423-646, you're on the air. What's up?
What's up, guys? This is the Axeman.
Oh, baby. Business has just picked up. Action Jackson, buddy. I'm glad you stayed up for the podcast tonight, dialed in. I'm sure you have some hot takes, so I'm going to turn it over to you, pal.
Okay. I have a special guest with me.
Okay.
it's my robot.
You've got your robot?
Yes.
All right, we'll pull him up a chair. Let's go.
I don't know what to say.
This is Action Jensen's robot, and even I know to go for two in that situation. Our coach is a dumbass.
Oh.
I think that was all right. So there's Action Jackson and his robot. Perhaps the best call in the history of this podcast. Let's keep it moving. Actually, let's go 865-850. You're on the horn. What's up, sir?
I wasn't ready for that, Jerry.
I wasn't either. Apparently that caller wasn't either because he just clicked.
He can't follow that up.
Axe is really flustered me. I don't know what to do now. All right, 423-963. You're on. Let's spin a little bit. What's up?
Well, if Axe and Jackson is business picking up, I'm business slowing down without a shadow of doubt.
Oh, come on.
This is Durkham Saul, whatever you want to call me. Basically, Trent just hit on something that I think a lot of people that I talk to. They have the same opinion that it's the receivers that are in poor situations. And, you know, I don't know that I agree because, I mean, the receivers have talent. It's just – and they do drop a lot of balls. I mean, I'll concede that. There's no defending that. But you have to look at the situations that they're placed in. For instance, when Dobbs did attempt to throw passes on Saturday, and he did it in Oklahoma too, when they do try to throw the ball down the field – the receivers are normally in such horrible situations with such small margins of error. I mean, they know that the defensive backs in the secondary are right on top of them and that there's no real chance that they're going to be able to catch the ball, turn upfield, and make some people miss. I mean, that's what they think that they're going to get away with. I mean, maybe that's because they go up against Malik Foreman in practice and they're used to him falling down and they go straight to the end zone.
Well, yeah, and I think it's a product also of not stretching the field. This isn't Madden. You can't run slants and just, like, take it to the house every time. Like, you have to stretch the field. And actually, I mean, you stretch the field, it even opens up more for what you want to do in the run game. It absolutely puzzles me, but I don't pretend to know football well enough to where I can actually, like, be critical of that, I guess. But, no, I think it's a great point.
Well, and, I mean, I'm famously not a great football mind either, but, you know, even I suspect in this situation, how much is the screen game a product of them, and it's been discussed a little bit before, I don't know if you guys have touched on it, how much of that do you think is them attempting to get Dobbs confident because he doesn't have that good of an arm on him against good defenses? I mean, for one thing, against Florida, when he did attempt to throw, or when he would attempt to throw and then he would just tuck it and run, it seemed like he's staying with one receiver. These plays are clearly designed to have one specific receiver in mind that he throws to. That's the completion, and then they move the ball however many yards. But it seems like he's not making reads. He's not looking off any defensive backs to the point that, I mean, that kind of goes back to what I was talking about before. The receivers are in terrible positions and he doesn't know what to do. I mean, the guy is a genius. He has a higher intellect than the three of us combined. But, you know, just because you're a genius doesn't necessarily mean you have the greatest in-game football mind that's possible.
Right.
And I think that means something.
Well, yeah, and I think if you follow along on Twitter during the game and stuff, people always cite, you know, or come back from the game and say, you know, I was there. He had guys wide open all over the field. And I think that speaks to your point. You know, I think at best he's probably given like half the field to look at, and he doesn't even look at the other half of the field. And that, you know, perhaps that's where the guys are that are open. He just never gets there in his progression because he doesn't really have a progression to begin with. Something else I found kind of interesting this week is in the press conference on Monday, I guess it was, somebody asked Butch about Dobbs having the ability to, or the go-ahead or the green light to call his own audible at the line. And he gave just like your quintessential answer to – he said a lot to say no, basically. And that puzzles me as well because, like you referenced, I mean, the guy is the highest of intellect or has the highest of intellect and is not given the freedom to, you know, break down a defense, diagnose the defense, see something he doesn't like and make a necessary change at the line. And I don't know if perhaps just his book smarts just do not correlate or not come over to the football field. And perhaps he's not very football smart, or is that, you know, Butch, the board, somebody basically saying, you know, I want my play run.
Do you guys think that Dobbs is as smart as Stephen Hawking? Also,
perhaps not
the
podcast for this.
I just got a text from Zim, and Jerry, he wants you to hang up on Durkham. I mean, I'm
Durkham. Can I appease? I think you made some great points. I don't know why Zim's so mad.
I mean, I'm just that guy. I'm all right with that. Yeah, you guys have a great night.
Thanks, man. Take care, brother. Thanks for the call. Let's keep it going. Damn you, Zim. If you're gonna call him out, call in. 423-943. You're on the horn. Let's have it.
What's up? How's it going?
Hey.
It's Otter.
Hey.
I'm just calling in. I want to, you know, make a couple points. I haven't heard what any other motherfuckers have said tonight, but I want to make my case and state my appointments. And I'm going to start off with this. The board is a fucking geriatric bitch. I'm just going to say it. He's old, washed up. And the Jankian was our savior. He threw the ball. I think Butch is the reason for the conservative bullshit. And, I mean, the Jankian got us back into several games. He passed that ball aggressively downfield. Josh Dobbs is the same fucking quarterback that he is last year, if not, he's improved. He's in better shape, stronger, faster. better arm, more accurate, somewhat, I'd say. I mean, that's just by experience. And now he acts like he can't fucking throw the ball.
I think I saw a statistic today on Twitter that said that I think we're running at like 60-something percent of the time, whereas last year it was somewhere around 40%. I don't think I have that backwards. So if that's correct, I think that does speak to your point. We do seem to kind of handicap our passing game or the throw game, as it's been termed in Knoxville now. I don't know. I don't have the answers. I mean, we allegedly have great receivers. We have a quarterback who, I mean, like, not the most accurate, but can get it done. It's not like he's bad, you know.
Exactly.
I don't know.
I thought it was when the board stated that our best matchups were the tight end and running back, and I'm like, you've got one kid over here on back spasms, one kid's fucking suspended, and you're saying we don't have a good matchup outside? I mean,
I agree, and you can blame the offensive line for not having time, but when you play two just very bad defenses in Bowling Green and Western whoever, and you still don't have a receiver with 100 yards or more after those games, then you can't really blame the offensive line, right? Like, it's not.
No, I haven't seen really a big problem other than, you know, a couple, you know, here and there, letting some guy just blow by you, pass protection. For the most part, they've done their job.
Yep.
I mean,
I agree, dude.
They've improved. But
what do you think going forward the rest of the year?
Well, I've been talking big shit. I've got a fucking sign outside my damn cubicle making fun of my ass, fucking laughed at.
That's not fun.
I hope we fucking pull something out. I hope we fucking boat race Arkansas and just go full steam ahead the whole goddamn time. Georgia, that's a fucking toss-up. Alabama, I just don't see us doing anything in Tuscaloosa. I'd feel a little bit better this year than last year in Neyland Stadium with those two. And I'm actually kind of worried. I think Kentucky may fucking beat our ass.
Nah. I mean, I think a lot of that depends on where we are. If we have any momentum at all,
it's
also momentum.
Momentum will change a lot of that, of course, but
You think that maybe we're overrating Georgia a little bit just because they did that number on a really, really bad South Carolina team?
I think their quarterback is overrated. I think that his 24 for 25, that's just a fucking fluke.
Oh, yeah, that won't continue.
No.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen against us.
No.
Another one thing I want to make another point about is the fucking defense. I don't know what Janchek is doing this year. I know Majit obviously hurt him. I don't know what the fuck we have the young white leader doing on the field, because he obviously is worth the fuck. I've never been a fan of the prevent defense, as they like to call that shit. It never works, period.
I mean, you know, I actually appreciate this call, because I think this is what the podcast is for. Just let it all out. Let's get it all out and move forward. I do think you're right. We need a big one over Arkansas so we can get excited again about Georgia and
exactly.
Attempt to at least put this in the rearview mirror. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I'll ask some friends. The way we lost that game, I'm glad we didn't fucking kick that field goal and win that shit. Butch didn't deserve a fucking scapegoat out of that fucking dumpster fire of a coach.
No, you're not. You're not glad that field goal wasn't made. You can't pull that stuff on me, buddy. You've been
no,
in my
I'm
house.
To win that
for,
fucking game.
I know
no,
you
no,
wanted
no, no,
that
no,
field
no,
goal
no,
to be
no,
good.
No,
this is great, Lee.
I wanted to win that game. I didn't want to let Butch fucking Jones get out of fucking up again.
All right, that's enough from a man. I think we hit the F word tally for the night. And I do think also you will not find a podcast around that will have a caller call or office coordinator. I believe he said a geriatric bitch is what he called him. I think the board seems like a very nice man, and I wish him well in all that he does, particularly with guiding our offense. But you know what? But that call kind of encompasses Twitter from like Saturday at like 7:30 8 o'clock until like sometime last night, and it's like slowly getting better, but not really. Still, we've got 9 minutes. I want to try to bang through these last two calls, and then we'll get some final thoughts from you, Trent. 865-803. You're on the horn. What's
up, guys? Caller Roberto.
Hey, dude. Hey. How are you? Good luck. Good luck following that one, pal.
My kids are still kind of awake, so
and terrified.
I don't want them to hear me dropping that kind of language.
No, okay.
I joke, but actually, he is a geriatric bitch. But at least, as far as DeBoer's concerned, I think he was brought in to be a yes man. I was hoping the opposite. I was hoping he was brought in to be the guy that Butch goes, I don't really know what I'm doing here, so I would hope that you would tell me what to do here. But Butch just wants yes man. I'm not going to slam Butch any more than I already have. We know what he is and we know what he isn't. He may be, I mean, I think we can all make the argument, he might be the best Sunday to Friday night coach in all of college football. I mean, he recruits
Absolutely.
Better than anybody I've seen. But, man, he just does some really, really odd things on game day. I really appreciate you guys welcoming in at the tailgate the other day, too, and my wife.
Are you kidding
nice.
Me?
Yes,
absolutely, dude. You're a friend of the site, baby. You're welcome all the time. But no,
Roberto, I do not appreciate that swig of moonshine that sent me over the edge right before the walk.
That was the old family recipe, man. I made it in my tub back at the house. Of course, I tripled just taking the dump in the tub before it. So,
I knew it had a little tang to it.
the thing I'm worried about at this point with Butch, I think we're actually probably going to win on Saturday. You get Big Ten Brett in there and Big East Butch Jones, and it's just going to be a really ugly football game. But I hope we win. I want to win out. I'd love to win out. But
are you kidding?
Is,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. You go.
I'd love to win out, but part of this says to me. What I've seen, I don't think we're going to win out. I don't know if that's going to even be possible. So when we judge him at the end of the season, what is unacceptable to you guys? Because I haven't heard really anybody really say this is completely unacceptable.
So when I look at it, I think we're going to be favored to win every game except for two, Georgia and Alabama. In my mind, you need 8 wins for me to, like, conjure up some excitement, like some legitimate excitement for next year, because in theory we're going to be better, we're going to be deeper, we're going to have better. I mean, our players are going to be older. 7 wins, I'm pissed off. I know what we have. I know we probably won't let him go with 7 wins, and so next year's like a.
Right.
I mean, let's just get through it. 6 wins, I want him fired. I need 8 or more to get past Oklahoma and some of Florida. I'm going to need a win over Georgia or Alabama. I'm just going to need it because I need to see that we can beat a team that either historically we haven't beaten, because I'm not going to say Florida was as good as us because they were not. And B, I'm going to need to see him beat a team that has comparable or better talent and just win a game via coaching. Like I want to see him. You can walk away from a win going, man, that scheme was great. Those decisions he made were fantastic. The players played well, and we beat a damn good team. I really haven't been able to say that. Like, South Carolina was exciting last year. But I was excited that we won just because I can, like, be funny on Twitter or whatever. But, like, if we're being honest, it wasn't, like, an incredible, like, win over just some Goliath. It was a win that, I mean, it was cool the way that we won. And that's that's, like, kind of the long and short of it for me. Like, I've yet to see him, like, really legitimately beat a team that's just head and shoulders in us. And now that we have, like, what I would consider like tier 1.5, maybe tier 2 SEC talent. We need to beat a Georgia. We need to beat an Alabama. I mean, that's what Hugh Freeze went in and did. And if he can do it at Ole Miss, you can't tell me that it can't come in and happen even quicker at Tennessee. So like I said, 8 wins or more and I'm happy ish, depending on where that number is. Anything less, I'm pretty pissed off. Trent Flubbs, where are you on that?
6 wins is unacceptable. 7 wins is a disappointment, but, I guess I wouldn't classify it as unacceptable. 8 wins is what I think should be the benchmark, so to speak. But, yeah, I'm like you, Roberto. You know, when we hired this guy, I had no idea who he was, and I assumed that he was a game day coach, that could out-coach other teams. Mm-hmm. It doesn't appear that he is. I mean, it appears that he's an out-talent other teams type of guy,
right.
Which is kind of surprising to me.
Well, if you look at his tenure, though, at Cincinnati, and I'm actually kind of I like Cincinnati. I'm up there a lot, so I watch a lot of their college games. And if you look at it, though, he did goofy things when he had Munchie Lego up there, too. Really goofy things. I mean, you guys, might have even seen it on your board, but the picture of him, like, on 4th-and-1 against Tennessee when it was 35-14, kicking the freaking field goal. Like,
oh, yeah.
What the hell
yeah.
are you doing? You're down 3 touchdowns.
Yep.
And I think, I mean, he had Isaiah Pede, guys. You could argue that day in Knoxville, Isaiah Pede was the best player on the football field.
I just got cut today, so he's been in the league for a bit. I mean, he was a great back. And I mean, what was the name of his quarterback? I can't remember the kid's name now.
Zach Kolaris.
Yeah. Now he definitely brought a good team in there and got dismissed pretty quickly by Derek Dooley.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, last point, guys. I appreciate it. I just want to say I think Butch really needs to win 8 games minimum. I think he needs to upset Georgia or Alabama to get me back on board. Have a good one. Thanks.
I'm with you. Later. I think we both are in line there. Trent Flubbs, we've got 3 minutes, and I really want to play this future song again. Any thoughts from you on the way out the door?
No, that's not unreasonable on Roberto's part. It is what it is.
Yeah, you want to do another one before Arkansas? We probably should. I mean, we didn't really talk about Arkansas. I don't care. What do you want to do? You come back from Hollywood, back to the real world.
Yeah, we need to keep it going, you know, get back into the groove. You know, so if the people want it, then we should do it.
Got to give the people what they want. I'm gonna try to conjure up a little good feels. Let's take it back to the 90s. We're going to go a little Tupac. We're going to go a little Bone Thugs and Harmony, a little Collabo. Trent, I'm sure you've never heard it. I'm sure you'd hate it. So go ahead and hang up now. You say go
all right,
balls.
See you later. All
right. Yeah. Trent Flubbs. For Trent Flubbs, I'm fake Rob Lewis. Real Rob Lewis, unban me on Twitter, boy. I like you. I want to follow you and chat, talk some football. Shout out to Twitter. You guys are awesome. We're undefeated. Feels like 98.
Nigga, we doing this shit from Cleveland to L.A., nigga. Whatever you niggas want me to do. What time is it? I don't give a fuck where you lay at, nigga. It's time to slay these bitch, man. They ain't even know what type of niggas we is. Where my thumbs at? Both. I know you niggas been waiting for this for a long time. Well, here it is, nigga. Here it is. What we gonna do?
Well, it must be coming to the Armageddon, Lord. You know that I won't fly by that left and you taught me. Look what I'm out with and you brought me. And I'm out stretching and talking. Get them about me, cause always one of us harming and been bombing. And y'all better my ghetto.
Niggas.